Welcome to episode 65 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw. With me today, my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What's up?
And we've brought back the wrestling man himself, Connor Casey. And unfortunately today, we are pigeonholing you once again because we brought you back to talk about some wrestling because WWE's Clash of Champions is going down this weekend. And so we're going to give you guys our preview, as we always do, of big WWE events. So Matt and Connor are going to take you through what to expect for that. But we also got a whole show to do. And in today's news flash, we got a lot to both celebrate and talk about. We're going to talk about the new trailer for the Are You Afraid of the Dark Nickelodeon Revival series. We are going to talk about the return of Black Jesus and also the TV show about him that's coming back. We will also be talking about the release date of Netflix's The Witcher, which may have now leaked. And we have the next installment of our grenade. I forgot what the word I was going to say. Segment. Yes, grenade segment that we will be getting into today because I didn't feel like the first one was violent enough. So we are going to keep going with that. And
very quick fan favorite.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, people love grenade. It's a fun game. And we will once again be digging into the mind-bending X-Men relaunch with Powers of X number 4. So be sure to stay tuned because when we get back, we are getting into a bunch of news in our news flash that you don't want to miss. All right, so starting right at the top, I threw this one. I mean, you know, it's good to host a show sometimes because you can use it for purely selfish gains. And I got a big surprise today that made me happy when I saw that Black Jesus is returning to Adult Swim. And not just returning, but like returning real soon. It's coming back on September 20th. This is Aaron Magruder's satirical show that imagines a guy who is essentially says he's Jesus, who exists in modern day Compton, California, and trying to bring like good faith and stuff and tidings to the people of the of Compton. And of course, it goes hilariously sideways in some really great ways. But it's from Aaron Magruder, the creator of the Boondocks. And this is kind of like he's having a good comeback on Adult Swim.
Yeah, for real.
Boondocks is coming back and is already, you know, headed into production. Black Jesus is coming back after being off the air for 4 years. And yeah, this was kind of a cult favorite show, but like really funny, aside from the controversial premise, obviously. But yeah, I mean, just the kind of, and it launched some good careers like Instagram sensation King Bach got his start really on that show. It's going to be sad because Charlie Murphy was a big part of that show, and now he's passed away. But Slink Johnson really became famous because of that, and he plays a titular. He plays Black Jesus, all right? So there you go. I can't say that word.
The word you were looking for was titular.
Titular. Ooh, I should have said it that. Oh, man. Anyway.
Yeah, so it got weird.
I do like Adult Swim just, like, whenever they make announcements like this, it is like a, oh, by the way, you're going to get this in like 3 weeks.
Yeah. And that's like really good. And that was just like a total surprise. And it was just like, I thought the show was done for good. But yeah, I have fond memories of not just the show, but like what was going on at the times I was watching this show. So I'm really happy about that.
They say why it took so long for it to come. Like, was it just he decided not to do it for a while, or was
I think they were behind the scenes things. Like they were going to, and then they didn't. Some of it might have been made before and not released.
Oh, okay.
Like there's a whole, I mean, everything kind of got muddled with Magruder somewhere in the mid 2010s with the Boondocks, this show, everything. So like, I guess it's getting straightened out now, or he needs money, or it's just the right climate for it to come back. Yeah, so. Either way,
the trailer looks super funny.
Oh, yeah.
The trailer looks super funny.
The end with him, like, if you watch the trailer, it's great. The ending scene with, like, oh, Jesus, it's your birthday. And he's doing all kinds of crazy dances on a swimming pool, on the top of a swimming pool. And it's just like, yeah. So it's a good thing, even if you're, like, heavily faith-based. This is a really fun show. You should check it out. All right, so moving right along. We're going to talk about the trailer that dropped in the middle of the night, Are You Afraid of the Dark? The Nickelodeon series that we all grew up with. I mean, most of us. I know Matt did. Connor, I assume you did.
Oh, yeah.
Snake. Yeah. And we just wanted to kind of touch on this one because we've talked several times about the idea of young adult horror and how this used to be a thing when we grew up and was very common. And we talked about it with Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. But then it kind of went away. And after, you know, our generation, and it became this thing, like, almost like taboo. New generations of kids weren't supposed to be scared at all.
Yeah.
It violates their safe space and stuff. But we're now having this revival that began a couple years ago with like the Goosebumps movie coming back. Mm-hmm. Then we got Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which is based on one of the most famous kids horror book series. And now we have Are You Afraid of the Dark coming back. And what I will say is we had teasers up until this trailer's debut, and now we've seen this. And I will say that I'm liking this. I like what I see about it. It kind of captures the feeling of the original very much with the whole ceremony around the fire, and I submit for the Midnight Society, and then the anthology stories, which I love. This one looks like it could be, in some parts, a little bit too scary for kids. Yeah,
that was my thing, is I still can't tell, even after the full trailer, how scary is this really going to be?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, there are shots of zombies and creepy people.
Yeah, that's the shot that really got me.
But to me, but like it's almost like, did any of you guys see A House with the Clock on Its Walls?
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, like that's a movie that is one of the scary movies.
I also thought that was a little too scary.
But the trailers looked a bit like it was going to be a bit much. And so I say, if this falls into that vein, I think it has a chance of being really good.
Well, yeah. I think it'll be a hit. Like, yeah. I mean, let me just put that out there. I think this is a smart property to bring back. Mm-hmm. I think it will be a hit. I think it'd be great for people like myself to sit down with their kids on like a Friday night or whatever and check this out and see. And it's a good way to kind of bridge parents who love horror with stuff that they can do with their kids. And I think I think it is going to be a success because I think this is badly needed in the market. Mm-hmm. I'm just getting ready for the inevitable backlash conversation.
But this is like everything I wanted. Like House on the Clock on the Walls is, I loved it, but it was what I wanted Goosebumps to be. Yeah. Was everything I wanted. Like it was scary. It was actually a little too scary at times.
It's a harder edged Goosebumps, but walks the line
beautifully.
And this
looks like it has the same type of vein. It's going to push a little, and you're going to get kids probably freaked out at a couple spots, but it's not enough.
And the original freaked us out.
Yeah,
like
a freaking clown episode. Yeah. I still remember that.
The Phantom Cab episode. Yeah. Like there are several ones that are like burned in my brains. I believe there's one about washing behind your ears that freaked me out or something like that. Like there's Are You Afraid of the Dark was.
It's got a good little cast too, including the actor.
Yeah, the guy who plays Young Ben.
Ben is in this.
I was like, Young Ben!
I also think it's kind of smart the way they're doing it, where it's like this three-episode thing to kind of try out and see how it goes, and then maybe they'll do like another set of books, adapt another, because this one's Carnival of Doom.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just this, the first episode, or if that's like the whole first like three-episode arc. I don't know whether they're gonna do that, like make it a longer story or not, but I think it's really smart to do it in these little chunks and make a big event of it, and then like go away, don't
get the try
it out
going.
And you can always switch out the cast too if you need to, because that allows you flexibility. So
that kid is gonna start asking you for some money, get him out quick. He's gonna be like So I say all that to say is, because we check in with horror regularly, I'm kind of excited for this. I'm excited to see this come back. I'm excited to see Creepshow come back. Okay. Like, I'm liking how they're kind of integrating horror into back.
It's the time of year.
Yeah, and it is the time of year. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, something that isn't going to fit in this time of year, but probably could. The release date for Netflix's The Witcher has apparently leaked. I think Netflix blew their own spot on this one. They were doing they did a post about the countdown to certain shows arriving, thinking like America's this bad at math now, like nobody will figure this out. But of course,
it wasn't even the American account.
I know. It was what was it?
The Netherlands? It was like the Netherlands.
Yeah, it was like out in the Netherlands somewhere.
Yeah, and then they
come on, get out of those coffee shops. You guys are just blowing the whole spot. Yeah. But they kind of put down a countdown, and people were like, easy math, and they just did the math, and based on this chart, which is unofficial, it seems like we're going to get The Witcher on December 17th, a.k.a. right in time for Christmas.
Yeah.
I believe that would be an official date. Because I was trying to think, like, barring any, I don't think Netflix has, like, a big blockbuster movie loaded up for the holiday season.
But they tend to, if they do, I don't think we'll know about it. We'll probably learn about it either this month.
That's when, like, they do those Christmas, like, they did Christmas Chronicles.
We'll get a Kurt Russell Christmas.
We got Burt Wright. It was Burt Box.
Yeah. But I'm talking about, like, I'm more, like, thinking, like, Bright. Like,
oh, yeah.
They're big block, like, the last couple of years they've done blockbuster, like, movie. They did Bird Box last year, then they did Bright, like, the year before. And I don't know if we have anything, but like Jim said, we might not know. But this would be a series or an event that would carry people through the Christmas holiday of binge watching.
And a bunch of people are going to be home, right? Holiday season, perfect time to launch a new
show. This is like right when everybody's getting home from college and like pulling in. They're like, ah, I'm in my parents' house. What the hell do I have to do? Fire up The Witcher.
Need bingeable stuff.
So, and unlike Bright, this actually looks good.
Oh, stop.
Oh, whoa.
Stop. We're not, whoa. We can't have unscheduled grenades.
That was pre-grenade.
The show.
That was a pre-grenade.
Yeah. That's not a grenade. People don't like
I haven't
that
actually seen Bright, so I cannot wait into this.
You got go on. You need to go see Bright. I mean, you were like one of the key people I would like to see weigh in on Bright because it was a big fight in his office when that movie came.
I remember because I was not a fight.
I love it.
That was one of the few fights.
I love Bright.
I liked it.
But yeah, The Witcher. So it's coming out, and I'm still on the fence about this one. But I wasn't heavily involved in the property before this, the books or the games. Yep. So I'm kind of like. The first trailer didn't grab me. I think Henry Cavill still kind of looks weird in this role. But you know, I will be there and I will be binging it. So bring on December.
That's what Netflix cares about.
Right? Yep, I guess that's true. They don't care about my feelings afterwards. So be on the lookout. Witcher coming presumably in December, which means we should be getting more promo materials for this.
New York Comic Con is right
New York
around the
Comic-Con,
corner.
Comic Con, yeah, and thereafter will be like the big push.
Yeah,
I expect to see Cavill's face on some big ass billboard in New York somewhere.
I was amazed that on the Netflix panel lineup was not a Witcher panel.
Yeah,
that surprised me. I was like, okay, well, I don't know if you're gonna make a splash. I don't know where you do it, kind of between now and then, as far as like conventions go. But anyway, we'll see.
So moving right along, Stephen King's The Stand miniseries. We talked about this when the big casting was first announced. James Marsden and Amber Heard were cast in the CBS All Access miniseries, which if you aren't excited for that, if you're excited for that, make sure you go out and get CBS All Access so you can access all of this Stand content. So, moving right along, we now have two big castings for The Stand that we got this week. The two rival leaders of these rival societies that are set up in this post-apocalyptic world. One is Mother Abigail, the kind of benevolent woman who sets up a kind of society in Colorado. And the other is, of course, Randall Flagg, the reoccurring Stephen King villain who sets up this kind of dark and murderous, destructive society of marauders out in Las Vegas. And these are the two societies that kind of go to war in The Stand. So Stephen King came on The View, of all places, to kind of drop some more casting announcements for The Stand, and he did, and they were just kind of like, you know, peripheral characters or side characters. But he also had one big surprise because he was on The View, not coincidentally, because Whoopi Goldberg is going to be playing Mother Abigail. So Whoopi Goldberg will be Mother Abigail in The Stand miniseries, and that's exciting for longtime fans. But I think, of course, the even bigger news came after Stephen King was on The View and dug up, you know, revealed this Whoopi Goldberg thing. Collider went digging to see who would be playing Randall Flagg because he's the big villain of this piece and nobody had said a word about it. And according to their sources that they dug into, Alexander Skarsgård will be playing Randall Flagg in The Stand. And Alexander Skarsgård's a longtime fan favorite. He was in True Blood. He was in Big Little Lies, a bunch of other movies in between, like Tarzan, if you remember that. Remember him and Margot Robbie made a Tarzan movie?
Yeah. Wow. This feels like...
Those Skarsgårds love their Stephen King.
They do.
Yeah. So Bill Skarsgård...
It's worked out
Jim's
for Bill.
Bill Skarsgård is Pennywise in the It movies and now...
And he's also in Castle Rock.
Yeah, he's in Castle Rock as the weird
money,
guy.
Dude.
And Alexander Skarsgård will now be Randall Flagg. And that's a pretty big... And that's awesome casting.
Yeah.
Like, I really do like that. If you don't know, Randall Flagg's this demonic figure. He changes and has aliases, and sometimes Stephen King doesn't always refer to him directly, but he's in several books. He's in, like, Hearts of Atlantis, The Dragon Eyes, The Dark Tower.
He's not the Man in Black, though, or is he the Man in Black?
No, he's not the Man in Black. Okay. He's a guy in the Dark Tower that, I think in the opening of the book, that Roland is chasing down, and he's trying to flee, and he's like a sorcerer or something. But he's a demonic figure that represents evil, okay? And there you go. And in The Stand, he has weird powers of, like, prophecy and magic and stuff like that, and I think Skarsgård, who was excellent playing like that vampire character in True Blood, who was, you know, danced around the line of being a villain or a good guy and things like that, he's really good at kind of balancing that. He had a similar role in Big Little Lies, and so he's good about kind of looking friendly or even like handsome and stuff, but also being very creepy and menacing. So
perfect.
I'm kind of thinking that's going to be perfect casting. And I'm liking this Stand miniseries more that I hear it. Like I've said, the 90s one was a big deal event when it came on. So I'm kind of liking how this one is shaping up so far. How about you guys?
I'm ready for it.
You ready for it?
Mm-hmm.
The more I hear about this, like not even the casting, just like the more I hear about like the plot, because I was never a giant Stephen King guy. So I come into a lot of these properties kind of new. Like I don't really have much reference material. But this sounds awesome, and I like the casting so far. So, I mean, it's not something that I would have paid attention to before It, I will say. And now that I've kind of been won over by that and they seem to have a good grasp on stuff, I'm like, oh, okay, I'll give a lot of other Stephen King stuff a try.
That's fair. It's going to run into a lot of the roadblocks that all Stephen King adaptations have. Like even It Chapter 2 had issues with how do we reconcile with the giant turtle god and all of that nonsense. Like it works in the book, but how well does it translate on screen? So yeah. Something as massive as The Stand, which in theory could never be just one movie. Now you got to deal with that in a miniseries. I'll be interested to see what they do.
Yeah.
All right. So moving right along, here's one that's pretty much this is a pretty fun thing for 90s kids like myself. Disney Plus is coming, and there's plenty to be excited about for that, like, already.
Yeah.
Between the Marvel shows, the Star Wars shows, the movies, the original content that Disney's putting out, like, all that stuff we've been over. But it just keeps getting better. You know?
Oh, I don't know. I think I have a hot take here, but I'm going to let you... finish introing.
Okay. Hot take. We're getting 90s Marvel animated series coming to Disney Plus. Spider-Man, X-Men, the Incredible Hulk, and Fantastic Four series. Two of those were really official, Spider-Man and X-Men. Two of those you had to check your local listings and try to track down a lot.
Also, they were terrible.
Yeah, the Fantastic Four series and Hulk series. They were terrible. They were pretty bad. But like they were so bad in a good way. They were on like UPN in my sit in Philadelphia, and they were like partnered with the Phantom 2020 and like other ridiculous
cartoons.
Phantom 2020.
Those animated shows were like the first MCU though.
Because
you were getting guest spots happening.
Yeah, Spider-Man crossed over.
There was an Iron Man show too, right?
There was an Iron Man.
I remember extra show. Ever.
I remember actually liking that at the time. The Iron Man song
for Iron Man is one of the best.
Because like all the Force Work stuff was part of that, right?
Yep, Force Works is part of that. Oh, yeah, that's right, because Spider-Woman.
Yeah. So, like, yeah. So they're coming back on Disney Plus, and, you know, that got a big woohoo for me because Spider-Man and X-Men and the X-Men animated series alone are just, you know, really fond pieces of my childhood. See, so I'm going to be excited to live those over again, but Jim is staring at me like...
I have a feeling that everyone's going to watch 4 episodes and then not care anymore.
Of which one? Both?
Any of them.
See, I agree with you on Spider-Man, because I don't think Spider-Man ages well at all.
Didn't Spider-Man end on a cliffhanger?
X-Men has aged even worse.
Than Spider-Man?
Yeah.
No.
No, X-Men didn't try all that 3D Both of them are still city great. Modeling stuff.
Spider-Man's pretty weak when you go back and watch it, but X-Men still has some thing great weak episodes.
Peter Parker's
the thing
hairstyle.
I'm more excited for is, supposedly, that hasn't been confirmed yet, but Earth's Mightiest Heroes is supposed to be on there. The Avengers show that came after that one. But
Avengers
also,
Assemble.
Yeah, Avengers Assemble. But also a lot of the classic stuff is supposed to be on there,
The
too.
Real thing that needs to get on there is Spectacular Spider-Man. So that's the best series.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say Darkwing Duck, and I was
crazy. I think Spider-Man the Animated Series was great.
I did too at the time. I loved it.
I was upset. Like that is all of those were my key entry points into the Marvel Universe. It made me total Marvel fan. But like,
I'm not hating on those. Like at the time, I'm just saying if you're going to go back and watch
Venom, Mark,
I agree.
Alice Cooper do the song on Hulu for a while. A year, like 2 or so years ago, I remember like watching some episodes, being like, "God, I cannot get through these."
I mean, it's different now. Like, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's very 90s and slightly still 80s.
I think you're letting some nostalgia talk.
No, I've watched it again. Like, I've actually sat down and taken a look at them again. They're very funny. The voice acting is very funny. There's a lot of screaming. Very bad voice acting.
I still like the Colossus episode. With the accent. I still like the Nightcrawler, but I thought they handled those really well. I still love that Iceman episode. The Rogue parts sometimes are hard for me now.
Rogue and Jean Grey are annoying characters.
That voice is...
Scott! Scott! It does have a Jean's whole dialogue, but
I still love Beast.
I want to watch these for the cheesy nostalgia factor. Like, I want to watch them and be like, oh, man. Like, oh, man. Or this is like what we were so into, man.
At
like,
the very least, seek out the Hobgoblin episodes because that's Mark Hamill doing that voice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, oh man. Right. No, Spider-Man has a lot of great things. The villains, like how over the top all the villains are.
One of my favorite
Peter
Spider-Man
Parker's hairstyle.
Episodes like, is the Punisher episode. I thought that was actually really well done.
Yeah. There's a lot of good ones, man. I love it. So I will be watching that. Disney Plus, I mean, I got to kill time on Disney Plus all day long anyway, so there will be a slot for those.
Is Darkwing Duck confirmed yet or no?
No, but I can't imagine they don't bring that back. I love Darkwing Duck. That and Gargoyles.
Yes.
Yep. Keith David's ready.
He's ready. Hey.
Gargoyles has been confirmed though, right? Gargoyles is officially part of it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I will be watching that. If you guys want to get on these guys about their hot takes, you can hit them up. Because I'm going to say my love for Spider-Man the Animated Series and X-Men is rock solid. Those other two, I don't
honestly
know about.
The Hulk one is probably the one I'm the most excited for.
What?
I loved what? That one.
This is just gone from a hot take to a bad take.
Nope. Like, nope. The Hulk one, I loved so much.
Okay.
As long as you didn't say the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four was bad.
Moving right along. We're back for another installment today of Grenade, where we toss a grenade in the room and we let it blow up. And today's grenade is a special one because this one is kind of like a specially customized bomb, I would say, for you, Mr. Matthew Aguilar.
Why?
Because today's grenade is all about cardiac.
Is it really?
Yup.
What?
Yes, we have a very special cardiac grenade for you, and it's right there with Mr. Jim Viscardi.
So, friend of the show, Patrick at Z's Comic Lair happened to get the first appearance of Cardiac in, and the only cardiac stand in the world is on this podcast. I don't know if this is in my shop, but I'm going to put it there for people who are watching the video. So we sent it in for Mr. Matt.
Wow, awesome. Really?
He's still the worst character in the world.
See? You don't know.
Is it really for me?
Yeah, that's for you.
Oh my God, I got the first appearance of cardiac.
Yeah, I know. So that's today's grenade. It's not all bad, kids, just so you don't think you start knowing what grenades are all about. Today's just a surprise grenade for Matt for a nice little possession. The first appearance of Spider-Man character Cardiac, which one person in the world wanted.
To be fair, so it's Amazing Spider-Man 344, which is also the first appearance of Cletus Cassidy.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a twofer.
Wait, at the end? Is that the issue before Carnage?
Yep.
Oh, man.
And wow. So
of course, it's not the first appearance of Carnage.
Just Cletus Cassidy.
Because then everyone would care about that issue. As opposed to just one person.
Yeah, exactly. So this issue really, like, with Absolute Carnage running wild, everyone's like, oh, I gotta get that first appearance of Cletus Cassidy. And they're like, who's the other guy on the cover? No one cares.
Cardiac.
So there you go. That's today's so grenade.
Thank Ooh. You, guys.
Although the call out's actually awesome.
What does it say?
Is he hero or villain? Introducing Cardiac. But wait, there's more.
That design is sick. Look at the design.
It is not.
It is awesome. The blue and the white, and he's got the rod.
Look, we set off this grenade. You are happy. That's all I'm going to get as much as I'm investing in. A discussion of whether we're not going to do an actual grenade.
He starts his own lab.
Because he's that's a firecracker, not even a grenade. It's Cardiac awesome. Like, it's just you fighting the world again. And it's my next entire world. So enjoy that, Matt.
Thank you, guys.
Congratulations. Matt has congratulations in order in his life right now.
So excited.
Because he's got an issue of Cardiac, and you're going to be a dad to a little girl. So that's a big deal. So there you go, buddy. Look, there's something to mark the milestone of fatherhood.
Better,
Cardiac.
Better role models than Cardiac.
this is probably fair.
Yes, it's definitely true. All right, so that's a rare bit of nicety that we put into this show. Don't get used to it. But when we get back, we are going to dive deep into the latest installment of Jonathan Hickman's X-Men relaunch, Powers of X number 4, and Matt and Connor are going to break down some wrestling for us for WWE's Clash of Champions. So stay tuned for that. All right, so we're back. We are now officially over halfway done with Jonathan Hickman's Dawn of X X-Men relaunch event. I've written an article on comicbook.com that basically has gathered up the biggest questions we have after 10 questions, the big 10 powers of 10 questions that we have after reading this series. Because Hickman has done a lot of reveals, a lot of remixes, but he's also introduced a lot of things that are still mysteries. And we're coming down the back half of this series, and it's time to see if we can land this plane, because we've had a great time reading it, breaking it down, talking about it in the office and on the show. Now, hopefully, we can just bring it home in satisfying fashion. In this one, Powers of X4, it gets weird, because it was very unexpected the way this shifts. And this is coming off of the weird kind of Helix shift we've done, where we got two Powers of X issues, then two House of X issues, and now we're back to the alternating format each week. And it was kind of interesting to see what happened in those kind of continuing issues. Because Powers of X 2 and 3 really kind of wrapped up the story of the future X-Men of the Man-Mutant-Machine Supremacy War timeline, and the reveal that that was all in Moira's 9th life. Then we got two issues of House of X in the 10th life, which saw the X-Men go on this mission to battle Mother Mold on the Orcus orbital base, and they completed their mission, but the X-Men team suffered horrific deaths. Cyclops, Jean Grey, you know, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Angel, Husk, M, all dead. Major characters. And so Professor X made this proclamation at the end, no more, that seemed like a big deal. And then we were waiting with Powers of X to see what that kind of evolved into. But that's not what we got at all.
No.
And if you haven't figured it out, Powers of X really is kind of like, House of X is like the main drive of the story, but Powers of X is like the larger framing of a story. Mm-hmm. It's all the stuff Hickman couldn't put into one chart, so he like had to actually create a second book. But it reframes the story of House of X. And it's kind of like Memento. You learn new scenes that redefine what you're seeing in House of X. So that's what we got, because, and that was like how it worked, right? We found out that the future thing was Moira's 9th timeline, or 9th lifetime. And so therefore the mission against Orcus and House of X became all the more important.
Yeah.
Because we knew all the sacrifice, that literally lifetimes of sacrifice that had gone into it. And the X-Men kind of completing this mission to stop Mother Mold, prevent Nimrod from being created. Now we pull back again, and this issue of House of X, or Powers of X, Powers of, I keep saying Powers of 10, nobody's corrected me. Powers of, I've said Powers of X.
You had it right.
Powers of 10. So, there are three main scenes in this Powers of 10 4. One takes place in the years before the X-Men's creation, and that's the big one, right? Like, we see Charles Xavier and Magneto go and meet Mr. Sinister at Bar Sinister.
A very fabulous Mr. Sinister.
Such a great
Bar sequence. Sinister, first appearance of Secret Wars number 2. So this is a Hickman doing a deep cut on his own.
On he did his a own, lot of deep terms. Cuts here.
This was... I want to just see Hickman write more Sinister.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Sinister.
It was funny.
Mr. Sinister Deadpool in this one. Really. So they go to meet Mr. Sinister. And the big thing is we find out that they made a secret pact. There's all these secret pacts that apparently have existed before X-Men. According to Moira's plan, where like Xavier and Magneto were always working together. And now we find out they were always working with Sinister. But he was kind of a... He was a sleeper agent of sorts.
Didn't we already know about his deal with Sinister? Because the history timeline was like, and then he betrays him, and then it
gets we knew how his life. We know how his life ends in one life.
Yeah, that was the 9th timeline.
Yeah,
I believe.
And we know he betrayed them, and like that was where all the different creations he was making come from. But we didn't know like the context of like what that agreement was, when things went wrong, why he, you know, decided like, so yeah, there's a lot of gaps.
Yeah, there's a lot of gaps. And like I said, this is what Hickman does. He gives you one thing and then like puts a shutter down over two others, like while you're obsessed over the one thing. So we find out that they had a secret pact with Sinister to create this mutant DNA library. That was the first scene in their whole conversation. And it's a great scene because
it's so good.
This is an island full of Sinister clones. And like, they have this weird society that they've made. This kingdom, it's like a royal court almost, except this very demented version of it run by multiple Mr. Sinisters. Who, like, there's a butler Mr. Sinister who doesn't give the guy who's talking to Xavier Magneto, he never had a cape. He's all envious of Magneto's cape.
Execute him.
Yeah, he's like, why did you ever tell me this? And he's like, oh, you know, it slipped my mind. And then he's just like, okay, execute this man. And then two other Sinisters, like guards with swords, just come and hack that dude to pieces.
And then a Sinister with a cape shows up.
Yeah, that's the best part of it, too. Like, So then they're like, okay, what we basically want you to do is make this mutant library, but we don't want you to know that you're doing this until Charles Xavier, like, makes you remember. And the guy's like, nah, I'm not messing with mutant genes. Like, I've been down that road. I hate it. And then he just gets shot in the head. That Sinister gets shot in the head by the Sinister who has, like, the frilly cape that we know. Mm-hmm. The traditional Sinister who's like, I'm the mutant Sinister, and like...
I just love his initial reaction, which was, I will.
Yeah,
I am.
Yeah, the guy's like, chair's like, nah, man, I'm not doing that. And he gets shot in the head, and the other Sinister's like, I will. And he sits down, and he's like, yeah, man, tell me all about this plan. This sounds great. And so, like, yeah. So we get that. But, of course, this is Hickman, and so we get that scene. But it's a major scene, even though it's played kind of silly and comedic. There's a whole Mr. Sinister bar Sinister gossip letter that's like a Wendy Williams style blind item.
So good.
That is full of, and it's so stupid, but full of major clues nonetheless about big things that are happening that Mr. Sinister knows, secrets of the X-Men universe that we don't know yet, that he knows, and, you know, including, I think, in the last references to himself being the mutant Sinister who talked to Xavier Magneto, knows more than he let them know that he knows. And it's just this whole Sinister talking to Sinister newsletter that's
so good.
Really bizarre, but like full of secrets. So that was one big scene. And that has a lot of importance because this is basically the framing of how these, why Hickman was able to tell a story with the X-Men horrifically dying. It goes back to House of X number one. The very first scene is Xavier in this garden, this bioorganic garden full of pods. And they open and people that are clones of the X-Men come crawling out. And he's like, to me, my X-Men. It was this really creepy scene. And we were all like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
And now this, like I said, Powers of 10 is the framing device that kind of doesn't tell you things directly, but kind of shows you all the pieces you need to put it together for yourself. And this is clearly kind of a setup for Mr. Sinister having made this mutant library to basically be able to do what he did for the Marauders, is like bring back any mutant, like at any time.
Yeah.
Which is going to be interesting how they implement that, because as I was talking to like Jamie and Rollin and other people around the office, it's like, this is theoretically a way you could use to explain any X-Men dying and being brought back ever. It's also unclear like how this factors in the House of X in this timeline, because Xavier's been a creep this whole time and we don't know why, but like, if he's just killing off X-Men and bringing them back again, that's a very drastic change to that character.
I got a lot of satisfaction because I'd been sort of stumping the whole Sinister is behind a lot of this idea since that first issue. And so seeing Sinister, I was like, oh, yes. But also, it would not surprise me if the Xavier that we see is a clone Xavier.
Yeah,
that's what I think, too. Like, I think, I mean, the last blind item is really important because it suggests that he's known about Moira, these lifetimes, all this plan before they came to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been playing he's playing them.
Yeah.
You know, he's pretending to be the sheep, but he's really a wolf in that, he could be pulling some double cross. There's also the fact that there's an entire location in this Krakoa place called the No Place, which is one of the flowers grows. It's a black flower that grows essentially what's a tumor that's not connected to the rest of Krakoa, but is part of it, and that's probably like a secret lab or lair where all these Sinister experiments are taking place. So we're going to get to see that. So that was one scene. The other important scene was, of course, Cypher on Krakoa and the whole history of how Xavier finally kind of bridged the gap with Krakoa, which was like this place, you know, Cypher makes a great reference joke. It's the place where mutants go to get murdered. The entire team of X-Men was lost on Krakoa. It was the mission where the original ones got captured and the all new X-Men had to come save them. Wolverine, Storm, Colossus, Nightcrawler were formed to save them from Krakoa.
Yeah.
And so Xavier made peace with Krakoa, and he takes Cypher there to kind of develop a language of how to... And this is in the past months before House of X started. It's about how they finally kind of made the symbiosis with Krakoa and then were able to create the Krakoa habitat for mutants and make this nation. But it's kind of ominous because... He's like, one thing always leads to 50 other things in a Hickman story. And so in this one, we learn that Krakoa was once part of a half of two living land masses that split apart in the ancient world. And when they did, it was because the demons from the limbo had used the sword to cut them apart and to gain a portal into the earth. The demons overrun. And if you remember, this is all callback to X-Men's Inferno event, which featured Mr. Sinister, Madeline Pryor, the Goblin Queen, the Jean Grey clone, that whole thing. Magic, like a whole bunch of stuff. So,
hey, Kofi.
Yeah, I know. The demons come out. They were repelled by Apocalypse, who was apparently an ancient world hero, which was a big change to that character, and his four horsemen who were sealed away on this other half of Krakoa that they pushed through this portal.
And that fits in because they've been teasing.
Yeah, they've been teasing them that they're returning. Sinister's teasing it. So all of that happens.
See if we can actually see Apocalypse's original four horsemen.
Like, that's what they keep teasing, right?
They're all throughout this story.
That's what I want to expect. Now, my question is that something, because that was teased in 1002, is that something that they are teasing for this particular event? Or is that something for Dawn of X when those titles roll out?
And that's what I'm going to get into, come around to, is that a lot of this is literally setting up the next era of X-Men. And it's just Hickman remixing all the old and new in one pot.
Yeah.
And then he's going to put it all back out.
Like, this Sinister stuff makes me, I cannot wait for the Hickman's core X-Men book, which is essentially all the Summers family. Like, this, like, after, I was excited for that because, one, I'm just a mark for half those people. But now, though, when you have all the implications of, like, what Sinister knew, like, all that stuff.
And there's another Summers brother teased.
Right? So you start throwing all that stuff, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, I cannot wait for that book now.
Yeah.
Hickman made Cypher cool.
Yeah.
Well,
how do you make Cypher cool?
So, like Hickman is doing a lot of connecting the dots with a bunch of characters through a bunch of different books that he himself has written. And I think what we may see here with Apocalypse is probably something that ties to stuff that he did in S.H.I.E.L.D., when Apocalypse was a member, like a kind of a founding member of S.H.I.E.L.D. In that area. And so, like, that's now, like, one of the homework things that I'm doing for myself is to go back and reread those issues of S.H.I.E.L.D. to see if there's stuff there that may inevitably tie into this. But there's got to be something.
So what you're saying is I should read every Marvel Hickman book.
Got it.
Every time he releases a new issue. Yes.
Jamie was lamenting. He's like, I got to go read Inferno now. The other day. I was like, that's pretty much what happened.
And so Cypher's in this, so he makes a thing with Krakoa. And I think Cypher, and I'm going to be writing this up, is one of the most important characters in this story. Because the story is all about technology versus biology and evolution and how it affects both. And he's kind of the centerpiece of being the meeting of biology and technology. Especially
for what happens next in the issue.
Yeah. And like how he makes contact with Krakoa. And in this little panel that you would miss if, like, I mean, I was reading in cinematic mode, so it's like highlighted. But if you were just looking at the page, you would
probably. Read it that way too?
Yeah.
Hey.
Because it really does put you up in the art and highlights things you would otherwise skip over with your eyes, which is like Cypher going through Krakoa and touching leaves, which are then being affected by the techno-organic virus, which is such a tiny moment, but so very important to the story. And if you go back through all of these books and every Cypher scene is something crucial, if you go back and look at them. So I'm really, and I think at the end of this, and so the final scene of this book is the future again. The distant 1,000-year future of the Librarian with the Phalanx, and I think is now Moira's 10th lifetime, because they're in that future there's a mutant DNA library that we thought came from Nimrod in the future war, but now seems like it came from Sinister's mutant library that's been existed for 1,000 years. And so the big reveal in that scene is that they want to do this ascension thing with the Phalanx, but they can't just be absorbed because the Phalanx don't absorb bio material. They only absorb techno material. Mm-hmm. And so they're using this scheme. One of the elders that's there with the Librarian converted their consciousness into this orb, which is then absorbed in the Phalanx, but the consciousness still retains its identity. So there's something that they're trying to do with taking, like...
Yeah, well, because isn't that... That's Nimrod. That's a creation of... I thought that's what that was.
What?
Nimrod, the actual object was Nimrod.
That orb is separate from the little robot.
Okay.
Yeah, no. That was just an orb they created to basically convert bio consciousness into techno forms to be absorbed.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
They're trying to find a way around this so that they can be part of the Phalanx but also retain their individuality, I guess.
Yeah.
And so we don't know what this is, but I feel like this is all going to culminate in learning some kind of next sort of existence level.
Well, this fits with what Destiny tells Moira earlier when she says, you'll get your 11th if you make the right choice.
Yeah.
I feel like when they end this book on, well, now we just have to see if they accept it, right? That they've made all the choices they can They've tried to do everything exactly right. Now it's up to them to see if, like, they'll accept this. And at that point, I think that's what kickstarts the 11th life.
Yeah.
If they accept it, right? So, I mean, it ties in to earlier stuff. Man, yeah. This is mind-blowing.
Yeah. So that's crazy. That's a simple issue that still raises so many questions and boggles the mind. We can't wait to see what's going to happen in House of X 5 next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Because, I mean, this has to answer what happened to the X-Men and possibly a major reveal about what's really going on Krakoa, who Xavier is, who these pod people are, what Sinister's up to in the present day 10th timeline and all of that, which, like I said, this is we're at the point now where we're going to see if Hickman can truly bring this home. All right. Got faith. I have faith, too. And this is one of the most exciting events in comics I've read in years and definitely one of the most exciting X-Men story I've read in like half a decade. So I'm enjoying it. All right. That's it for me. But you guys got to take us home by telling us what's going to be hot at WWE's
Clash of Champions.
What was that?
It was like a half shimmy, half kind of,
grinding on somebody.
Wait for it.
That was horrific. It was horrific.
My goodness.
Anyway, what's going on at WWE's Clash of Champions? Connor, Matt, take us through it.
Can we say what Kofi labeled it in his notes?
Go for it.
Would you call it Champy Thingy?
Champions Thingy, yeah.
WWE Champions Thingy is taking place this Sunday in Charlotte, North Carolina on pay-per-view in the WWE Network.
Yeah.
Matt, this is our first pay-per-view venture since SummerSlam.
God, has it been really?
Yeah, it's been about a minute. And TV's kind of sucked, but the card looks great, which has kind of been the story of WWE all year.
It's hard to screw this one up.
It really is. We've done this pretty much with every show. What's your pick of the show? What's the match of the night?
I gotta say Braun and Seth. I gotta say that's the one I am personally looking forward to the most. I mean, yes, you obviously know Becky Sasha is like right beneath
it. I'm surprised you're not, because that one has a story behind it.
It does, but here's the thing. I totally wrote off Rollins and Lesnar.
We all
did. And then they produced a fantastic match with little to no story. It was just they told the story in the ring and they did it very well. Seth and Strowman, I think, could be one of those, like, they do it again, and this has little to no setup other than the fact, but they'll tell the story in the tag.
Here's my issue with that match. And I wrote about this in the preview. My fear is that we're going to get late into the show, and they're going to do the Raw tag title match where Seth and Braun have to defend their titles and then turn right around and have the match. And my fear of what's going to happen is Braun is going to turn on Seth at some point, hit him with a power slam, and let Bobby or Dolph pin him so they lose the tag titles. And then Michael Cole gets on the mic and goes, "How will Seth overcome the odds?" And then he does.
That was a pretty good impression.
And then we don't. And then we just move the heck on. And Braun turns heel again, and the Big Show comparisons start popping up because this is like the third time in a year and a half. And the heel run did not work last year. It sucked all the momentum that Braun had going right out of him.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. So and if they do that, we'll be disappointed.
I really don't want that, but I'm afraid that's the easiest route they can go with this.
True.
If they want to try just a little bit harder and go, you know what? Braun's still a good guy, but he is going to try and beat the living hell out of Seth now.
Which I think you can, like, that's not hard get away to with do. It. Yeah, like, you can do that.
We know who's waiting in the wings.
Yeah, I think if they do do you think they will do the other?
I'm just hoping that they go that route.
If they go the other, then I will be upset. I will be disappointed.
I'm hoping that they go the route of Braun doesn't win, but he's not a joke.
Yeah, but I don't want them to turn him.
Yes.
Like, just because that's easy and that's a little lazy. Yeah. But if they do that, I will be disappointed. I mean, Becky and Sasha, I am looking forward to in a huge way. I don't want to be caught on the thing of, like, when I was looking at the card, that match immediately stuck out to me. I go, that could be awesome. That could be great. They have the same type of contrasting styles, and they can do, like, Braun has come so far in the last 2 years, right?
Yeah.
They could do some great stuff together. So that's the one I'm most excited
about. I'm going to please the Legion of Kofis here and say I think it's Kofi Randy. I feel like the match at SummerSlam they were holding back because they knew they had... No, the ending of that match sucked. The ending of the SummerSlam match sucked. And I felt like it was because they were holding back because they go, we got to do this for at least another month. Ooh. I think this is the payoff. I think this is the one where Kofi finally goes, no, Randy, you're stupid. Then he beats him.
Okay.
Because he keeps calling him stupid.
And I just, I don't know. They didn't wow me last time.
Yeah.
And it didn't. Now, I do like the revival. Like, I like what they've done to the storyline parts in between. I'm just not looking forward to another match between those two.
All right. One other big question I have for you, and Jim, I want your take on this too. In between this Sunday and the next pay-per-view in Hell in a Cell, we have NXT moving to USA. We have SmackDown moving to Fox. A lot of, they're going to be promoting the hell out of all these shows up through that. By the time we get to Hell in a Cell, who is Universal Champion and who is WWE Champion?
Who's Universal?
I don't know.
Is it still Seth and it's Seth versus Bray?
Seth versus Bray?
Because Wyatt said he's challenging the winner at Hell in a Cell.
In that case, it's probably going to be Braun.
That would be great.
Because Braun is a former Wyatt family member.
And there's a lot of playoff there, yeah.
And if they keep him not heel, he can go into that. It's a babyface, and you have a true matchup. I wasn't going to say that before, but I'm totally going with that because he warmed me up. That sounds great.
On SmackDown, they'll find some way to put it back on Roman.
I'm afraid of a certain beast popping back up on that first episode of SmackDown and going, hey, I want that title, Kofi.
To put Brock Lesnar back on like primetime network TV, I'm not opposed to it.
He needs to wrestle on a Fox episode, though. It can't just be
Show
up, F5, leave.
I don't want any more of those. If he's got to come back for a run, come back for a run.
Yeah.
Like, show up back-to-back weeks one time would be nice. Like, don't just have Paul come out and do a...
I think the question that we kind of are overlooking here is, will Bayley help Sasha, and will Sasha help Bayley?
Oh.
I don't think
resulting in the both of them being champion.
I do think they're both champion, but I don't think it's help as so much it is just Sasha beats Becky.
See, I think they'll help each other in some form or fashion.
Because you can't see your girl losing clean, can you?
No. He's already on me today, and he's sour because Becky torched Bailey on social media.
She's a little sour. She's just being petty.
They're both going to be. I mean, it's not like one's there not one petty, night, one's there great. The other night. Like, they will be there.
Yeah.
Their whole thing this far has been helping each other out.
Yeah. Sasha even teased the hug connection thing on social media and was like,
really
hey, like
to see for like when Bayley comes out, like when her huggers sort of go up in the air and have them just immediately deflate, like as just like a heel move type thing.
Or if she just pulls out like a little like pin and just goes,
just a knife and just,
you know how you said where your thing of like, oh, I think they'll do the easy thing with Braun.
Yeah.
They'll do the easy thing here. For me, that's where I come from. I see them finding some way to help each other out. That's just a go-to move, right? Yeah. And not even just WWE, like NXT, like in their NXT stuff,
But those are heel moves.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I think the opportunity is just too rich there to have them both help each other out and the night.
My question is, champions. But then the thing that I don't really get is, I don't know if you go into SmackDown debuting on Fox with Bayley as your champion.
That's a good point, but then there's also talk of the draft, and Becky's being advertised for SmackDown, even though she's on Raw. There's a big indication that people are going to get moved. Becky's going to wind up on SmackDown at some point.
And then, I mean, I think...
So
if you had told me this six months ago, I would have questioned that. But Bayley having
then is... Oh, now we're going down a real dark spiral. We probably should wrap this up soon. But if Bayley helps Sasha, and then Becky goes to SmackDown, then you immediately have a feud with Becky and Bayley to kick off Fox.
And that's great. Right?
That could work.
No, I don't want to see that.
I want to see that.
I think this all leads to a four horsewomen fatal four way at WrestleMania.
I know one thing I don't want to see. I don't want to see Charlotte get the belt again. It's been too long.
They got to get her to 16 somehow.
They will. She will get the belt again at some point, and she's fantastic. That's not any disparaging comments towards Charlotte because she's great.
Bailey have it?
Because Bayley has some momentum that she's wanted forever. Why would you take it away from her?
I can also see Becky winning it night one on SmackDown because she was also the first SmackDown Women's Champion.
That's true.
They could also do that too.
Who better to have her win it from than Charlotte?
I agree that there's ways to see it.
This whole thing is just tangled.
I just think to take it off of Bayley so soon, because she hasn't had the belt that long. I know it kind of feels like it, but it really hasn't been that long. And she's the first time in so long she has momentum. Yeah. Don't take the belt.
That's true. I mean,
she, don't take what the belt happens? From her.
Is that? Do we have anything else?
That is all. It's just I'm expecting a really good show this Sunday.
Awesome. That's all it. Right.
Yeah. Shinsuke and Miz is going to be the sleeper match.
Enough from you. To wrap this
gonna
up,
be good. So
none
good.
Of this matters. We'll be back to see which one of you is right
awesome.
Next week when this is all played out.
None of this matters.
That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. If you are just getting into the show, we post new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com, where you can subscribe to an RSS feed and get regular updates about the show, or you can subscribe on iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Google Playlist, or tell any Amazon Alexa device, fire up Comic Book Nation podcast, and it will start playing. You can continue the discussion with us at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
At Connor Casey _ CB.
If you like the show, be sure to go on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review, because we read reviews on air semi-regularly. And if we read yours, we send you guys a Comic Book Nation t-shirt like the one I'm sporting here. It's awesome. It's advertising. It works both ways. And today we're going to read a couple because we've gotten all our shirts out, so it's time to get a few more out. And so here are a couple of reviews that we're going to go through really quick.
If yours is read, make sure you email me at editor@comicbook.com.
Yep.
Just putting it
I'm not going to give out your personal information again. at editor@comicbook.com. That's the one. Whatever he said. Hit up Jim. Leave him your real name, your address, and your shirt size. We need those three pieces of information. So first one is, you need to listen to this one by Jeff L. Hartley. Been listening since the first week, and this podcast has never let me down. You don't have to be a comic book nerd to enjoy this, and it helps to keep me up to date on many different entertainment options. Kofi and Matt and the rotating cast for the third chair are a great team.
Thank you, bud.
The next one is CJ Master by Johnny FNAF. I don't know if that means Johnny FanAF or what it means, but okay.
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, okay.
Good job.
What? What is that?
It's a game.
Five Nights at Freddy's?
It's the evil Chuck E. Cheese thing.
Oh, no, I don't know. I'm learning something
That'd
new.
Be right up your alley.
Mm-hmm. My new favorite day of the week is Wednesday and Friday, thanks to you guys. I cannot wait till I get out of work and listen to your podcast on the way home. It's like I'm talking with my friends about the world of pop, geek, whatever. Everything from comics to movies to TV to wrestling, which I suddenly am into again. Love the different guests and occasional extra episodes. Thank you so much for making my commute easy a couple days a week.
For those watching the video, you guys both of you missed a perfect opportunity to do two sweet instead of
I almost
bump.
Did,
we
and
can't
I went
do
bump.
That. We lose all. All
right,
cool
put a cap on this wrestling crap.
That.
Let's go. Don't let the name deceive you. By C Payne 883. This is a must listen for anyone, especially for any nerd, geek, movie goer, Disney lover, gamer, TV show connoisseur, WWE fan, and a lot of other things.
Dang.
I love this show. The hosts make you feel like you are a part of the team and you are among friends while discussing a variety of topics. They discuss and review, as well as spoil, beware, a lot from an assortment of different perspectives and isn't limited to a single viewpoint. I express how highly I recommend a must listen. All right, so thank you for those kind reviews. We really do appreciate you guys showing love on those reviews. And so that's why we send you the t-shirts.
Great.
So if you heard your review just read, be sure to hit up Jim at editor@comicbook.com. Real name, shirt size, address. We're going to get it out to you. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Thank you for tuning in with us. And we'll see you guys next episode. Peace.
Deuces.
Later.